My name is Eva Tchaikovsky, and I'm moderating the session, this session. And I would like to introduce Emmanuel Ngué-Oum from the Bati speech community in Cameroon. And Emmanuel is also at the University of Yaoundé 1 and archive manager for Alora. And he will be speaking on beyond expanding the functions of threatened languages, expanding the life opportunities of communities who speak them. Economic empowerment and language revitalization in critical socioeconomic conditions in Africa.
Thank you everyone. Thank you for coming to attend this talk. I come from Cameroon. I come from Central Africa. Cameroon is located in the Central African region, and in Cameroon I happen to come from the central region of Cameroon. So I'm part of the Bati speech community, but Bati itself is part of a broader speech community known as Basa. So the picture you see in the middle is believed to be the cradle where our people originate from. So it's very mythical place for us, and it's presently a question of controversy between the Catholic mission and us, because they set a cross on top of this stone of this big hill actually, and 4 months ago it got destroyed. So people went there in the night and destroyed it because they wanted it to be restored to our community. And this is, it's the government was not happy with that. Okay. So I really wish to thank ECLG C5 Organizing and Review Committee and Compute-L too, because I'm presenting also at Compute-L. I was able to get a grant from them. That's the reason why I'm here. I couldn't make it otherwise. And the Pan-African Institute for Development, which is supporting most of the actions that I'll be talking about here today. So the question I'm trying to answer here is, do language documentation and revitalization, as it is being implemented in Africa, but I'll be talking about the specific case of Cameroon, does it really benefit communities for which it is intended? And if no, how can we change that? Okay, I draw from personal experiences into the project. One is the Bakola documentation project, which was founded by Dobes. Nadine is not here. Nadine Grimm was part of the research team. So the objectives were set. We got 160,000 euros for a 3-year project from Dobes. And the outcomes, we got an online corpus, a PhD thesis, of course presentations and articles for researchers, 3-year guaranteed income for 2 researchers, including myself, capacity building of team members, promotion of team members in the academia, long-term preservation of the language heritage. What about the community? Second experience, which is ongoing. Expected outcomes are those you can see there, online corpus, thesis, dictionaries. Impact, we hope to be able to build capacity of team members, especially the PhD students. Of course, we are aiming at achieving long-term preservation of the language heritage, promotion of team members in the academia, but does the community really feel the impact? Another experience, I was not part of this project, but it's a colleague of mine with pretty the same situation. We have outcomes expressed in terms of what it can bring to the academia and to science, but not really thinking about what is the community's expectations? We think to suggest what is good for the community. Of course, the issue of language endangerment is a serious one. But how do we tackle it in such a way that the community is a stakeholder, an active state stakeholder, and not leaving it to the researchers to be negotiating and in a way to try to impose it on the community. As it is, the scholars and the community's agendas do not seem to be congruent, not always. Let's see how it looks like. So the researcher, and rightfully so, seeks to safeguard the language heritage. The researcher seeks to avail data for scientific inquiry to assist the community in language development efforts. Academic self-fulfillment, which is legitimate, capacity building in the scholarship. But most of the time, communities seek to cope with their daily survival. They want to ensure a better future for their kids. They care about their socio-economic empowerment and security. Of course, they care about their language heritage, but not in the order of priority set by the researcher. So, language and cultural revitalization, it's sometimes peripheral to their daily concerns. Of course, every time a language documentation project is elaborated, it seeks and it claims to benefit the community. No one will say it. The contrary, of course. But it looks like it's the researcher's agenda that prevails all the time. Because she or he has the access to the information about funding opportunities. She or he is the intermediary between the community and the funding organizations. She or he is credited to have the required skills and therefore is more likely to be trusted. But let's make it clear. The researcher's input is crucial, but it has to closely connect with the immediate well-being of the community, which is more or less the leading topic for this conference. The researcher's perspective is sometimes a long-term one and might still benefit the community someday, because there's usually claim that, well, the material that we are availing will serve the community even if the language were to die. But language documentation and language revitalization are happening in the midst of the community's social life. Ignoring the reality of that social life for long-term benefits is like letting in the neighbor's house burn because the insurance is going to pay for it anyway. So, how to better reach a compromise between the two agendas, the researchers and the communities? I think we have to rethink the order of priorities in the current language documentation and language revitalization funding models in Africa. Why and how? Try to answer the question why. Why we think of the order of priorities? Well, the situation in Cameroon, which is the one I know best, there appears to be a correlation between language vitality and the community's well-being. The less economically empowered the community, the less the members are inclined to asserting and performing the group's identity through language use, and the more exposed and endangered their cultural heritage. African communities whose languages are most endangered also happen to be the most economically and politically marginalized. The case being Bakola, the Bache, and Bezen, which I've just mentioned. So this is a case study which we did within the framework of the BATIL documentation project. So we compared language jobs. By the way, Cameroon and Africa are highly multilingual, and the situation where I grew up and where I'm working now is multilingual one. There's no one who speaks two languages. That's not, you know, the average is 5, 10, and etc. But how do people make choices in their daily uses of language? At this appeared in our survey, language choice is a function of how much empowered is the social situation in which people find themselves. So in the public space is a situation where people display the ties, the community ties, where they display and perform their identity, where they perform their pride to belong to the group. And in this situation, we have noticed that most of the time, I mean, when you go to public meetings, when you go to public events, the community's language is usually chosen. Which led us to conclude that in a multilingual social ecology, economic and political empowerment of a group language, of a group leverages the group members' pride to belong to the group. The prouder the members feel about their group, the more they are inclined to performing and marketing their group's identity in the public space. The case being communities such as the Fulani, the Betifang, the Douala, the Bassa, because these are the most empowered communities in terms of their participation in the government, in the political landscape, in they are among the highly educated communities. People who belong to these communities proudly perform their identity in public spaces. So if we need people to be able to perform their identity, they need to be able to market it. They need to be able to say, I belong to this community by way of speaking their language. If they are not empowered, they feel shy about who they are. And as a matter of consequence, will not proudly display their identity. That is the reason why I think economic empowerment should stand at the forefront of language documentation and revitalization in critically endangered situations in Africa, and not at the other end. I think it should be the start and then lead to language revitalization and language documentation. I'll try to show how this can be done. I think because language documentation is such a vital issue, it has to rely on the community's shareholding and undertaking, and ought not to be reduced to a bargain. Anna is here, she's working in Cameroon. I don't know how comfortable she is in her field situation. In my own situation, even among your people, when you go, you want to record people, what the action is, well, then what? You have to keep bargaining. I should say bribing, because you have to basically extract and force them to give you the information, because you have to fulfill your agenda. You have to be successful. So then deliver the results, etc. We cannot afford language documentation and revitalization between active involvement of the communities. And the efforts need to be targeted, to be geared towards the community's needs. How to make it happen? I think language and cultural maintenance need to be recognized as full-fledged components of the human development agenda. And implementation of language and cultural maintenance in Africa cannot be successful and sustainable without the involvement of the actors I've mentioned it. Linguists alone cannot do anymore. And probably you have heard about the United Nations General Assembly proclaiming 2019 as the International Year of Indigenous Languages. I hope this is a step towards really making language development a full component of our efforts. I think I've mentioned it. And I propose very quickly in 2 minutes, a two-in-one approach, priority to socioeconomic empowerment by identification of the most urgent and vital needs of the community, operationalizing socioeconomic strategies, implementing development projects through a number of activities. Time is running and I'll not mention all of them. And letting language documentation and revitalization be derived products of the socioeconomic empowerment. We do language documentation as we go, as we implement development projects. There are many advantages undertaking of the community by the community, better understanding by the community, and the researcher as expert. I have to round up very, of course, this entails resolving the current models and developing joint curricula in community development, cultural modeling, and cultural maintenance, increased partnership between development organization and language institute. And the case of the Pan-African Institute for Development, which is willing to host this kind of training, is really welcome. This is the institution link, maybe you can watch. They have a long-standing experience in development project, but they don't connect them with cultural and language issues all the time. So the recommendations, and I am quoting a talk I attended this morning during the first session of workshop 3, which say, and they were quite in line with my own recommendation, but I think their own were better worded. Create interprofessional networks, integration of research and practice, priority to community-initiated, community-monitored, and community-followed-up projects, documentation of language through revitalization. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Comments and questions for Amelia?
All right, so I absolutely agree that as linguists, we're in a difficult position because we don't have any training in development, and we come into these very difficult socioeconomic conditions without the faintest idea of what to do with them. So are there any sort of first steps you would recommend for linguists working with the community that could use economic empowerment, but we're not sure where or how to start if there's no community-initiated request for our assistance with that? What's a good first step for a linguist in that situation?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I'm afraid I don't have an answer. That's why I suggest that we sit together with people who work in development projects and think of what could be the best strategies. I don't have an answer, unfortunately, but I just only feel that the way it is being done is not the good way. And we don't need to be working apart from. We are part of the same agenda. We are working for the community. We are working for the well-being, and we need to connect each other. And I'm very happy that most of the talks I've been hearing here really are addressing this aspect, the coming together of actors of development. Yes, thank you.
I just wanted to say, that's not to start, but I see this happen a lot in our communities. Like my language, Kwakwala from BC Coast, is very endangered, yet it's being studied all over the world. But we as First Nations from that community don't even know who's studying it or how widespread the research is even. And so I really like your suggestion that there needs to be more, policy around that, and that linguists work or University Works research has to be based on what the community needs. So, like, there's probably five different research projects going on of our language that ends up in archives.
Yeah, exactly.
And our language is dying.
Yeah, that's the situation. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, so I mean, one thing that you sort of, in the part that you skipped over really fast.
Yeah, sorry. I can share
really
the slides.
Yes, yeah, so I'll look at your slide later. But, you know, one first step maybe too, as you're thinking about this, you know, if you're thinking really economic empowerment, one way to go about that potentially is to actually, you know, pay community members, you know, like to sort of have paid community members who are working on the project as well as the researchers.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering what your perspective is on sort of paying consultants or paying people to get involved. like, because sometimes the idea of paying people is a little weird, and you know, it depends on where you are. I mean, I work in West Africa.
Yes,
so
yeah.
I do, you know, I pay people, but it's, you know, it's this idea of, do you pay people just to work with you, or do you pay them to sort of develop their own project with your help? So I'm just wondering sort of what your thoughts are on
Yeah, thank you. I mentioned it, and you are right. I skipped most of my last. What I really advocate is setting up or identifying the needs of the community first. Training, if necessary, community leaders to be part of the process of, you know, setting up a development project. Like, if we could empower the community in maybe, you know, optimizing agricultural practices, you know, and the training activities, because language will be at the heart of this, you know, of these efforts, of these activities, then language documentation could just come as an opportunistic, you know, activity. So while we do that, while people, if people know that, oh, good, we need to get this training because it's going to, you know, optimize our incomes, then it becomes their project. And the researcher can set back somehow and just, you know, take advantage in court. But he will not be the only one taking advantage. That would be the community's, you know, initiative.
So you're actually advocating, like, sorry, I don't want to take up the most time, but like, say, set up an agriculture project or a technology-based project for the community and use that project.
Exactly.
I also agree with all of this, and I think it's documentation. There's not a lot in it for the speech community. We've adopted another model where these people, I work with this community here, and they identify the projects they want to do. I'm an linguist, but I'm the facilitator of their project.
Yeah.
It's only my job to source the funding to get it to them. At the end of this, I pay them for the work that they've done, writing, translating, creating pieces of art. We reproduce everything for them. It's their product to sell. It's a mutual benefit, I think.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you.
It can be done. Because we're linguists, we're not stupid people too. We can do things.
Yeah.
Thank you, Emmanuel. I was going to say, along the same lines, there's a lot of collaboration going on between different disciplines to do such projects in communities where the linguistic work that comes out of it is kind of just a side effect of whatever the main work was, whether it's, I'm thinking of research in the poles, the polar science research, you know, on snow and ice and this sort of thing, but I, as a linguist, would not feel like I could go in and do anything with agriculture in the community. I mean, I just don't know that I would be able to contribute in any meaningful way, but as a linguist attached to a lot larger group whose other members have that sort of capacity to go into the community, that seems like the direction to go in these sorts of projects. And I think that that is the direction that a lot of funding agencies are encouraging that researchers go in.
Yeah.
So that was just a comment.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, thank you. But I mentioned it there. That's why I'm thinking that this institution, which is really, you know, have a long-standing expertise in development, could help. I mean, most of the time, we just work each one on their side. There's not much communication between actors of development. And of course, it is not up to the linguist to, you know, but we could develop, you know, this expertise. It is not because, there's no such field as economics, linguistics, I don't know what. But we could think of it.
Yeah.
Why not? I just want to add, because you mentioned oral literature. Yeah, exactly, because when we go there, one of the things that we are looking for is, like, you know, oral literature practices. And my thinking is that this is a potential marketable resource. You know, if you train people to be able to perform, you know, their oral art, in some way, this could become products of, you know, which they can sell later on, you know. And being a speaker, being a performer, would be a skill that would be, you know, promoted. This is my thinking.
As it is, so the community of martial arts practitioners is 50 million. The community of Okinawans is 1.4 million. So people have a vested interest in learning this language, and then if they want to learn it, to learn martial arts, which they are indeed paying into the local economy. If there were a martial arts book based on Okinawan, which I intend to do, it will be a bestseller before it's printed, just because of the way that community works.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much.
One last question.
I'm not going to be a Yomboy.
Oh. Yomboy.
Yomboy.
Yeah.
In Minneapolis.
Oh, I'm going to see that.
So thank you for this presentation. And it feels good to see another fellow. We belong to the same language group or community group. So thank you for doing this work. I just want to share to you that I would love to connect with you regarding the work that I'm doing in the Cameroon Council. And it pretty much brings that perspective that you've been talking about, and really working with a community from the ground up and understanding what their needs are and creating projects that are community-based and is really about the revival and really integrating all the ways of knowing and doing of our community and what we do so that it can also be represented in a positive light. So I would love to connect.
Thank you very much. I could never have imagined that I would be speaking Basa in Hawaii. Thank you very much.
Any more? No? So thank you very much.
Thank you.